Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. W. Kamau Bell describes himself as a, quote, socio-political comedian and dad. He's probably best known for his Emmy-nominated show that runs on CNN. It's a comedic documentary series called United Shades of America. Bell describes it as a show about, quote, a black guy going places you wouldn't expect him to go, such as Arkansas, at night, on the side of the road, in conversation with a fully hooded member of the Ku Klux Klan.
We are a white race. Okay. I'm proud of my race. I'm proud to be white. You proud to be a black man?
I am proud to be a black man.
Okay, that's good. You're a black man. You married a black woman?
I'm married to a white woman.
You know what the Bible says about racial marriage? An abomination of sin.
On the list of sins, where's interracial marriage? There's like murder. And is interracial marriage equal to that, or is it?
It'd be above because it's an abomination.
So it's worse than murder.
Yeah.
That's W. Kamau Bell from his show United Shades of America. But in his stand-up, he goes even further and fearlessly mixes race and politics. Take this moment from his most recent Showtime comedy special, Semi-Prominent Negro.
When me and my wife have kids, our kids are born, our kids are considered to be either mixed race or black. What are they not considered to be? Exactly. Everybody got that in unison. So by having a child with a white person, I've taken the possibility of another white person out of the mix. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. I believe Malcolm X said, by any means necessary.
W. Kamau Bell will be in town performing at the Wilbur Theater this Saturday night, but he joins us right now from the studios of NPR in Washington. W. Kamau Bell, welcome to Radio Boston.
That's a good joke. I just want to be clear, just in case people are confused. That's quality joke writing. I don't normally say that about myself, but I have about four or five jokes where I'm like, that's a good joke.
That is a good joke. I've laughed every time I've heard it. But I want to start by actually backing up to what we heard before. We played that clip from Semi-Prominent Negro, and we heard that moment with you talking to the Klan member from, what was it, the first episode of United Shades of America. I got to ask, were you nervous about that?
It's funny. People ask me that all the time. Yes.
I mean, how could you not be, right?
I mean, I feel like it's very clear. I mean, I think people, that was the first episode, so I don't know that people had a real sense of what I looked like when I wasn't nervous, but I'm looking at that like, look at that guy. Doesn't he look nervous? But yes, I was nervous the whole time. There was times I thought it was a bad decision. There was times where literally it overwhelmed me and I like had to take a knee, Colin Kaepernick style, and just sort of back out of my feelings. Like, I was just like overwhelmed with emotion and had to sort of like fight back some emotions so I could keep going.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, because this is the thing about political comedy is that you're always going to be treading into territory which is by design provocative, uncomfortable, even scary at times. And I'm wondering if we could just sort of go back in time a little bit, back to, what, 2012 or so, when Chris Rock tapped you for the FX show Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. I mean, tell us about that, because I'm wondering what you learned from working with Rock about doing this kind of comedy.
Oh, it's funny. I was just thinking about this. I was putting together the list of the 10 things I learned from Chris Rock, because I did learn a lot of things from him that were very sort of like real world applicable things as far as being in your career and also being a comedian. So, you know, I think the thing he said to somebody else about me when he was saying, well, what do you like about Kamau, like as far as this, he's like, I don't know, which is sort of his answer to everything, but he can portray anger with a smile. And I thought that, like, oh, is that what I'm doing? I think I learned what my strength is through working with him. Like the thing, because I'm a comedian in the world trying to do things. But when Chris Rock says, I think I can see a TV show in you, you know, he was really good at, like, you know, it was sort of a Mr. Miyagi Daniel-san situation where he really pulled me apart and put me back together. And I certainly am a much better comedian because of the time I spent with Chris Rock. Like, how to always look for jokes. I think Chris is really clear about, like, if you're talking, there's an opportunity for a joke. Like, so, and which I just demonstrated by not having a joke at the end of that sentence. But, you know, there's always, so he doesn't believe in like long setups. He believes in like, if you're setting things up, find jokes on the way to the joke and then find jokes after the joke. So I think I've become a lot more scientific about it since I worked with him.
Well, let's listen to a little bit about how that played out in the FX series, Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. Sadly, it only ran for a couple of seasons, but here's a clip from the show from 2013.
This week, the state of Mississippi shocked everybody by passing a landmark piece of progressive legislation.
148 years after the Civil War, Mississippi finally ratified the 13th Amendment. That's abolishing slavery.
A
I know what the 13th Amendment is. I keep a copy of it in my wallet in case I ever to go south of Maryland. And if I lose that, I have a tattoo of it on my chest.
That's from the FX series, Totally Biased, with W. Kamau Bell. Now that show also had like kind of man on the street moments too, right?
Yeah, that's funny. I'm having a little bit of a memory thing. I was like, I hardly remember saying those words that you just played. But there was. I mean, if anything, the United States of America show is an outgrowth of the man on the street stuff. The feedback I got from people who watched Totally Biased is that their favorite stuff I did was actually the man on the street stuff. And I'd never done anything man on the street before that. And so for me, it was like, oh, this is, again, listening to other people who are smarter than you. Is that what I'm good at? Okay. And so United States of America is the extension of that.
Yeah. And did you one more question about Chris Rock here, because I mean, he's such a huge figure in the world of political comedy or comedy in general. I mean, were there moments where you were sort of cutting your teeth in terms of like how to handle politically charged moments in the Man on the Street segments where he gave you some good advice about how to handle that?
You know, I think the best advice he gave me was really like, you have to get in there and mix it up with the people. And I think I'm naturally an introvert and a shy person. And so going out and stopping people and talking to them to me seems like, I don't want to bother people while they're living their lives. But the thing he said is like, when you get out there and mix it up with the people, they will really get to know you and respect you. And that has 100% been true. And I think a part of me, you know, now, before Totally Biased, if there had been like a big commotion on the streets, you know, if I'd been involved in that, I would have run away from it. But now, like with the microphone, I'm like, when people get loud and aggressive, I'm like, yes, this is what we want. Like, I sort of lean into these moments, which has actually helped with United States of America. Like, there's times where I feel myself wanting to pull back, but I feel the comedian in me going, no, keep going further.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about United Shades of America. Runs on CNN, Emmy nominated. Tell us about what that show has sort of done for you and your career. Because I think people, it's fair to say that at least after the first season of it, that may be the thing you were best known for.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that, because for a while it was being best known for a show that had been canceled. So I'm really happy that got shifted to being known for success. I'm totally proud of Totally Biased. But, you know, I think that, CNN has Bourdain, they have Morgan Spurlock, they have Lisa Ling, and so they had already sort of had these shows by people who are already established brands, and I'm really happy about the fact that that the show that we created with United States of America fits right into that and extends the brand in a different way, and that I'm not the junior member of the team anymore.
Right.
Thanks to the Emmy nomination, I'm like one of the people. Like, I ran into Bourdain at the Emmys. We'd never actually met before. And he was just like, we got to do something together. And I was just like, the CNN person was like, that sounds good. Inside, I'm like, yippee.
Well, let's play a clip here from United Shades of America. This is an episode in which you take on the problem of gentrification. And you're in Portland, Oregon. And you're talking with Pastor Don Fraser. Here it is.
When you see a community just overrun, and you grew up in it, and it changes so fast that you just about get whiplash from it, it does impact you.
And when you say overrun, how do you mean by overrun?
Well, the highest value in our community, African-American community, is relationship. And we used to sit on one another's porches and talk, watch each other's kids. And all of a sudden, you have developers coming in with big money who are buying all this property up and changing it. So the whole community is uprooted and dispersed and displaced.
That's Pastor Don Fraser speaking to W. Kamau Bell on the show United Shades of America. That moment that we picked there is it's pretty serious. It's not funny. And so I'm just wondering, like, how do you know when to inject the comedy?
You know, I think that, you know, I think there was a lot of worry about that when we first started, because I think when the show was pitched, it was pitched as a more broad reality type show, like, you know, sort of me getting into wacky adventures, I think, or whoever. They hadn't thought about me yet, but getting into, and I came in and sort of was like, well, if I want to do this, I want to do it my way, which thankfully the production team Jimmy Fox, who's the head of production, was great about. And so I've really gotten less and less worried about how to do the funny, just knowing that we will figure out a way to make it funny. I'd rather have a good conversation with somebody and figure out a way to sort of frame it in a way that maybe had something, but I'd rather have the good conversation. And also, when people know you respect them, because even in that conversation with Pastor John Fraser, it ends with him talking about collard green scones, and we laughed about that. So you can sort of, when people respect you and think you're really there to listen and pay attention, you can make jokes about things that are painful because they know you're doing it respectfully.
Yeah, so we're living in a time where people look to smart comedians to really sort of help us think about and talk about the political intensity of our lives at the moment. And I want to talk to you about that in a second. But let's back up. I mean, what first pulled you into comedy?
I mean, I think, you know, I was a comedy nerd before that was a thing. Like, now people talk about comedy nerds. It's this sort of group of people who follow comedy the way some people follow sports. And I was doing that before that there was a name for it. My mom said she could get me to do anything if she promised to let me stay up and watch Saturday Night Live. So I was just like, you know, I would have had trading cards of the cast of Saturday Night Live if that existed. Like, I was, you know, I thought Eddie Murphy was only like, you know, was like a friend of mine. You know, it's just like I was really connected to it and grew up really thinking that comedy was the second best thing to being like an actual superhero. And so it was just something that I was always pulled into. And then in my life with my mom and my dad, like, we talked about race and racism a lot. So it was just sort of eventually as I grew up in comedy, I sort of like put these two things together.
Well, so in your Showtime special, Semi-Prominent Negro, you do talk about your mom a little bit. And, you know, you talk about her as, you know, being an intense, passionate person when it came to talking about race. And there's sort of a little like throwaway line you have about her having gone trying to get a PhD but wasn't allowed to get it from whatever school she was going to. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know it to be true, that's the story that she has told me and that we've talked about, and that's been one of those family stories that get passed around, that she was at Stanford and she wanted a PhD in African-American literature. And at that point, they didn't feel like that was actually a field of study, which is only, we're talking about the early 70s, basically. And so she withdrew. I mean, many people think my mom is a doctor and many people think she's a professor. And it's just like, no, she's just a really smart black lady. Like, but she doesn't actually have the letters behind her name that that people assume she has.
Yeah. Well, speaking of smart and intelligent black women, I want to play a clip from your Showtime, your most recent Showtime comedy special, Semi-Prominent Negro. And it's about the process that you go through, you and your wife go through, when thinking about a preschool that's right for your daughter.
Just so you know, at this preschool, we don't focus kids on, like, letters and numbers and learning right away. We just want them to experience play. It's like, thank you, lady, because I'm going to take my daughter the f*** out of here. Because I don't know if you noticed, but I'm raising an African-American lady baby. And they need to be as smart as possible, as early as possible, because they start way behind the starting line of the other babies. So if they don't get all their knowledge right away soon, then suddenly they're going to be behind their entire lives. But I thank you for giving us a tour. This preschool is clearly for white male babies, all right?
That's W. Kamau Bell from his Showtime special, Semi-Prominent Negro. What I love about that clip is that you kind of you hear the audience with you, they're laughing, and then there's a ooh, and they're not sure if it's supposed to be funny. I mean, like, you're really pushing them there.
I think it's easy for me to push because I'm talking about my kids. I feel like if I don't get my kids back, I can't expect other people to. So I feel like it's very easy to lean into that joke and just be like, this is exactly how I feel, and I don't care how you feel because it's too important for me to worry about your feelings. I'm worried about my kids' feelings.
So how do you decide, or when did you decide that you were going to talk? Because you do talk really honestly about your kids, about your marriage. You're in an interracial marriage. And you know, why did you decide to bring that into your comedy?
I think it's just a part of sort of navigating this journey. I think that there was a point when I was single where I don't think I was a comic who talked about his girlfriend or had girlfriend jokes in that way. And a lot of comics did. But then once you get married and have kids, it takes up so much of your life that it sort of seems, as a comic, you're just observing your life. And when so much of my life is caught up with my family, it seems like I'm just skipping material if I don't talk about it. And also, the thing I want to do is try to, like, a lot of people have jokes about kids, but I want to put my lens on the jokes about kids. I'm not just going to do the jokes about how my kids are adorable, and they are, but I'd want to do jokes about how I see them, how I see their lives playing out in this world, and how I'm trying to, me and my wife are trying to help them get ahead of the game.
Yeah. Well, there's one more clip I want to play from your Showtime special, and it's a hilariously political one where you talk about how there's a unique way that President Obama can speak to the black community, and use an example of the fact that he sang Amazing Grace at the funeral of Clementa Pinckney, who was one of the people murdered in Charleston, South Carolina in the church massacre. It's not really a moment where you'd think one could find comedy, but you do, because you talk about how no other politician could sing Amazing Grace the way Obama did. So let's listen to the clip.
Bernie Sanders ain't singing, you know what I'm saying? You're like, oh, amazing. You know the words. Oh, capitalism. Big banks. Hillary Clinton ain't singing. She walk up there like, Bill, get out of here. I got it, Hillary. Amazing Grace. Call me. But Barack started singing, going into like the next verse, and there's a gospel choir that appeared out of nowhere. And a black guy playing organist fell out of the sky, just playing it. It's like a revival meeting. He's singing Amazing Grace. Like, oh my God, this is so black! I was like, touch me, don't touch me, touch me, don't touch me. Look at me, don't look at me, I can't take it anymore. I'm gonna miss you, Obama! Good night, everybody.
What can you say other than good night, everybody, after the political joke ends up in a black G-spot joke is what I think I called it.
I got that out to be a family-friendly program.
Sorry. That's oops. Right. Sorry.
That's right. We'll see if the FCC comes after us.
Yes.
I mean, in the last minute that we have here, what do you make of the fact that you're doing your comedy at this political moment? And as I was saying earlier, so many people do look to comedians to kind of help us navigate and make sense of and, you know, deal with this world that we're living in. Is that a place that you want to be?
I mean, it's a place where I am. It's certainly there's a different amount of pressure during sort of election season than there is during just regular old times. You feel like very like I'm doing shows on this tour, and if I go on stage and don't say the words Donald Trump for an hour, people are gonna be like, "Are you not paying attention to the news?" So there, currently the news gives you homework assignments. So there is a sense, but also I think a lot of it with my audience is like we're also sort of looking together to come together to have like a place to mourn collectively with what's going on in the world, and sort of I'm there to sort of like help us get through these moments. So I honor it. I'm happy about it. But sometimes I go on stage going, I have no idea what to do here. Let's figure it out together.
Well, W. Kamau Bell is a comedian and host of CNN's United Shades of America. It'll return for season 2 this spring. But he will be at the Wilbur Theater this Saturday. We've got more information about that at radioboston.org. It has been so great to speak with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to having you in town. Well, that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.